Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Dick Fouché, and I'm glad to see you all here this morning. I'd like to especially welcome all of those who are here for the first time. We extend a special welcome to you. We hope that you find Unity Church a place that helps you find and keep your balance in life, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of integrity, service, and joy. Following the service, you're invited to join us in the parish halls to my right for refreshments. We also have a wonderful bookstall there and many information tables. So please take time to stop and visit. If you are interested in joining Unity Church, please stop by the welcome table in the parish hall. I encourage you to take time to look at the This Week at Unity, which is in your order of worship. There's a special announcement for an ice cream social a week from Wednesday, September 5, here in the church. Next week, the service will be our annual labor in the pulpit service, and it will be the guest speaker will be Michael Kukta, Workers Interfaith Network. Worship Associate Pauline Eichten and I would like to meet you and greet you at the Portland Avenue doors. And again, welcome to Unity Church.
Life can be hard. Life can be sweet. How will you receive it? How will you give it back? Come, let us worship together. Remain standing and join me in responsive reading number 603. Beyond words. Existence is beyond the power of words to define. In the beginning of heaven and earth, there were no words. And whether we dispassionately see to the core of life or passionately see the surface, the core and the surface are essentially the same.
Words make them seem different, only to express appearance.
If name be needed, wonder names them both. From wonder into wonder, existence opens.
Every Sunday, we set aside time to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love and compassion that permeates this sacred space. Our hearts are with those who live with grief or chronic pain, and those with illness seen or not seen, those who care for family members in ill health, and especially those who knowingly face their final days. Let us remember those who suffer at the hands of violence perpetrated by crime, war, or indifference. May we embrace them all with a compassionate heart. Our thoughts are with Marion Wallace as she continues to live through her final days under the care of hospice and her granddaughter. We also hold Jean Lewis in our thoughts and prayers. Jean is a new member of Unity who has recently diagnosed with terminal cancer and whose care is now under supervision of hospice. We remember Kathleen Bartholomew and Paul England on this, the 20th anniversary of the birth and death of their beautiful daughter, Maria Natala. We also congratulate Bill Carlson on his marriage to Kevin Dahlberg yesterday here at the sanctuary. Now I invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or hold in the embrace of this community. Listen to the prayer of the great Hindu writer, Rabindranath Tagore. Let me not pray to be sheltered from dangers, but to be fearless in the face of them. Let me not beg for the stilling of my pain, but for the heart to conquer it. Let me not look for allies in life's battlefields, but to my own strength. Let me not crave in anxious fear to be saved, but hope for patience to win my freedom. Amen.
Thank you.
Microgrants is listed as our recipient this morning for the offering. However, given the devastating flooding in southeast Minnesota, the offering will go to Minnesota Helps, Southeast Minnesota Flood Disaster Fund, which is part of the Minnesota Community Foundation and the St. Paul Foundation. 100% of all donations will be redistributed to provide financial support where it is urgently needed. Checks can be made out to Unity Church with a memo to Minnesota Helps. Will the ushers please come forward? The first reading is a poem by Pablo Neruda called Keeping Quiet. And now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any languages. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment. Without rush, without engines, we would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would not look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victory with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade. Doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness, of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go.
Guest house by Rumi. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house clean and empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. We're going to start this morning in an unorthodox way, by playing a game I call, Whose Line Is It? I'm going to read a few first lines of novels, and I would like for you to call out loud and clear which novels they come from. You ready? Okay, we'll start with some easy ones. At least I think so. Call Me Ishmael. All right, I Am an Invisible Man. See, I told you these would be easy. Okay, try this one. You better not never tell nobody but God. Who is it? African-American female writer? Won the 83 Pulitzer Prize? Color Purple. Very good. Okay. And this last one is my favorite because it goes right to the core of my own view of religion. In our family, there was no clear lines between religion and fly fishing. Where's it from? Very good, thank you. We may not be writers, but in a sense we fashion the story of our own life. And that life is based on the goals we have followed, the events that have occurred, and the world's view we have adopted to provide the underpinning that holds it all together. So assume for a moment that you are asked to write the story of your life. What would be your first line? After posing this question, I became curious as to how professional writers would answer that, would solve this problem. So I Googled it. You would not believe how many websites there are to help you write your autobiography. I picked a few suggestions totally at random. One writer suggests that the best way to start an autobiography is to state your name. Then, when you're writing the first paragraph, you should explain the type of person you are. Another states the way you convey your story should reflect who you are. The last random pick admonishes us that nothing says writers have to start at the beginning of a story. Regardless of how you wish to start thinking about your life story and its opening line, the process does require careful thought. You need to understand where you have been in your life, where you're going, what elements are important, what you have learned, and what has been that driving force, that worldview that gives it meaning. But above all, you need to be an honest observer and an honest storyteller. I have a friend who played a central role in Jim Jones' People's Temple in California. He got involved for idealistic reasons, but it ended in tragedy when his son was killed in the Jonestown suicides. He told me once he was intending to write his story about those turbulent times. He never wrote the book. I often thought that he never understood himself and his motivations well enough to explain those events to others, and least of all, to himself. Shame and guilt may have also played a part in his inability to face his story. Knowing and accepting yourself as you truly are can be a forbidding task. But if you do want to understand yourself and the course you have taken in life, then you have to make the effort to embrace what you are, difficult as it may be. When I first started my reading for this talk, I came across a story that proved to be very instructive. A 9th century Chinese teacher noticed that one of his students was dressed for pilgrimage. Straw hat, cloak, sandal, walking staff, and small pack. The teacher asked, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" The student responded, "I don't know." To which the teacher replied, "Not knowing is most intimate." It's a curious exchange and one that sounded strange to my ears. It was only later that I fully understood its import. Let's examine what went on in the dialogue. The "I don't know" is not a not knowing based on dualistic thinking. It is as if there was a right answer to the query. The student was just going on pilgrimage with eyes wide open to see what he could see. His mind empty, free of judgments and expectations, open to the horizon of possibilities. It is not what we don't know, but it's what we do know that limits us. Becoming familiar and comfortable with not knowing is the starting point of all meaningful journeys. Now, if we were writing fiction, we wouldn't have this problem. The ending of the journey could be established and the story made to evolve toward that end. In our lives, we can also establish goals and work toward their completion. We do that all the time. But life has a way of not necessarily going along with our self-centered storyline. There can be success and also failure, happiness and sadness, or we can have gain or experience loss. At times, life can seem a bit chaotic. It's how we react to change that makes life full of anxiety and stress, or it can be rich and rewarding. This lesson was reinforced by events that happened in my own life earlier this year. After 25 years of media production, principally in the area of health communication, my business began to slow. Both my business partner and I decided that we wanted to end our careers doing something we had only dreamed of doing, documentary film. We had the experience, the equipment, and now we had the time. We were discussing over lunch the future of our company, and by the time we paid the check, it was settled. We took immediate steps to learn what we needed to know, and it's been an exciting time. We now have three projects in the works, one of which I will tell you about later. We proceeded in our new direction, not knowing how we would accomplish it or whether the new venture would be successful. It was this occasion that caused me to see what Rosamund Zander meant in The Art of Possibility, that if you draw a different frame around the same set of circumstances, new pathways come into view. I must say that I wanted to have the attitude of the Chinese monk toward our new venture. However, I had this nagging feeling that I was closer to those Irish monks who took to the sea in a rudderless boat, trusting their fate and their journey to God and the current. But I have never felt adrift. As an aside, if any of you are contemplating going into business for yourself, I don't suggest this as a business plan. But on other levels of your life, this approach can serve you well because it resides at the heart of what Zen refers to as having a beginner's mind. Suzuki Roshi's quote on the cover of The Order of Worship gives us a hint as to what that means. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities, but in the expert's mind, there are few. Elsewhere in his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, he states, when we have no thought of achievement, no thought of self, and here we might say no thought of our self-centeredness, we are true beginners. Then we can really learn something. Then Suzuki makes a startling statement. If we lose our beginner's mind, we lose our true self. Suzuki's ideas are mirrored in James Carse's books, The Silence of God. Carr states, to live as beginners is to be an expert at nothing but to be awake to unique details of our journey, taking all details as gift. He continues by saying, death lies out there among those possibilities. So does evil, and so do pain and disappointment and boredom. These are the things we so often go to great lengths to mask and avoid in our lives. By doing so, we hide from our true selves. The human condition can be complex and troubling. At times like that, we should remember Rumi's words regarding adversities, that we should meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. I like Rumi. In the hands of a master storyteller, we can get further glimpses of the human condition, and who better to offer this insight than Shakespeare? In the first part of his 29th sonnet, he writes, when, in disgrace with fortune in men's eyes, I, all alone, beweep my outcast state, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy, contented least. Shakespeare successfully describes someone totally absorbed in his misfortune. He thinks he is being judged by others and finding himself without wealth, position, looks, friends, ability. He is even alienated from God, and in not seeing his life clearly, is possessed by envy and desire and overcome with depression. This describes a rather common human condition. There's another aspect of our lives that keeps us from knowing our true self. In a soliloquy in As You Like It, Shakespeare outlines what is easily a description of our lives. You all know these first lines. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. Shakespeare accurately cast our lives in seven acts. We enter the stage as infant, then the whiny schoolboy, then the lover, next the soldier seeking fleeting reputation even in the cannon's mouth, followed by a career as justice full of wise saws and modern instances. As we age, we become what he calls the lean and slippered pantaloon, sort of a senior citizen, but with a little bit of a comic edge to it. Shakespeare says, his big manly voice turning again toward childish trouble. And lastly, the second childishness and mere oblivion. For a comedy, that's a pretty grim assessment. But we all sense the correctness and pathos of Shakespeare's imagery. We should note, however, that if the world is truly a theatrical stage, and we are proceeding through life as players, then it follows that we are also living scripted lives. That is the heart of our spiritual dilemma. We have veiled the knowledge of our true self, believing rather that the role or roles we play or the thoughts we have are who we are. How can we write our opening line of our life story when we don't understand ourselves? It's important to realize that the goals we have established for our lives, the events that have occurred, and the worldviews we have embraced can just as easily stand in the way of knowing who we are. In all those things, we hide ourselves from ourselves. We even create elaborate stories to explain difficult or embarrassing moments that slowly take on the guise of truth with repeated telling, and we begin to believe the myth these stories create. And why? What keeps us from this discovery? As Shakespeare suggested, we live reactive and self-centered lives, making judgments, comparisons, holding on to likes and dislikes. The anguish and suffering of our adversities often control the way we view our lives, while we take solace in the role we play. This is understandable since the roles provide us with a certain amount of rewards. There's the degrees, the professional licenses, the honors. We use them to establish our place in the community and our standing among others. They create our sense of self-worth. Small wonder they have such weight in our thinking. But remember that role-playing is bought with a price. Roles are surrounded by rules and restraints and expectation on the part of others. When we play a role, we accept limitations, the greatest of which is the loss of freedom. We have forgotten that we don't need to live our lives solely by the prepared script. That was brought home to me late spring when my business partner received a letter from a lifelong friend, Jean, telling of her impending year-long trip with her daughter and family around the world, visiting 10 equatorial countries with only a backpack apiece. The story became the basis of my company's third documentary. The story isn't a travelogue about a trip around the world, but a story about a journey of personal discovery, finding meaningful priorities that can shape a life and a family's future. It features Jean, the grandmother, and the Donovans, Pat and Marcy, and their three children, ages 11 and under. Pat was a successful vice president with Vail Resorts, a land development company that owns and manages exclusive property throughout the West. Pat was also a member of a local school board in Colorado, which consumed what spare time he had. By following the expected and accepted roles, he was as busy as he was successful. But his wife Marcy told us that when Pat first started traveling for his job, the children would ask, "When will Daddy be home?" But when the traveling became routine, the children stopped asking about their father. That is when she became alarmed. Marcy began to see that the family she and Pat had envisioned was not being realized. They had subtly slipped into the roles demanded by a corporate life, and to change their situation would take radical action. Their solution was to break with her current life and take a year to live as a family in a simplified way and to evaluate their priorities and decide what the rest of their life would hold for them and their family. Pat readily admits that he has no idea what this venture will reveal. He is just going to see what happens. We might say that he is approaching the coming year with the quality of a beginner's mind, free of expectations. He's just searching for clarity. Of course, not all of us can do what the Donovans are doing, but we all need at some point to take the time in our lives to become attentive to ourselves in order to open what is closed within us, mitigate what is judgmental, and explore what is hidden. Or we may need to evaluate the role we are currently playing. Above all, we need to learn to go lightly through life. I'm not suggesting by that a lack of seriousness, but a quality of honesty and openness that can only be found when we have a beginner's mind and are open to possibilities. There's an ancient Asian poem written at least 1,100 years before Shakespeare that reads, "The world is entangled in a tangle. Who can untangle the tangle?" You could just as easily read this, "I am entangled in a knot. Who can untangle the tangle?" First, you have to realize that only you can untangle the knot. Jack Kornfield, in Seeking the Path of Wisdom, offers some guidance for this task. To disentangle ourselves to be free requires that we train our attention. We must begin to see how we get caught by fear, by attachment, by aversion, caught by suffering. This means directing our attention to our everyday experience and learning to listen to our bodies, our hearts, and our minds. We attain wisdom not by creating ideals, but by learning to see things clearly as they are. The fundamental question of who we are cannot be solved by secondhand knowledge or by reasoning it out. Rather, they are answered by an intuitive, silent knowing that Kornfield says comes by developing our own capacity to see clearly and directly. And that is hard work. In the poem Pauline read earlier, Neruda says, "If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving, and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves." If you are serious about finding the opening lines of your life story, you must be prepared for a challenging journey. And that is because the beginning of your life story doesn't begin with words, a statement of purpose, or a listing of accomplishments. Rather, it begins by discovering what lies beyond words, finding it in silence and wonder and the universe of possibilities. Let it be so. want to leave you with one last first line. You can ponder it at your leisure. This is from a story called I Think I Found It on Mulberry Street by Dr. Seuss. Whenever I go to school, my dad says to me, Marco, keep your eyelids up and see what you can see.